Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Astros win yesterday afternoon, 2-1 over the Phillies. They sweep the Phillies. They're on a heater right now, the Astros are. They're the best team in the month of June in all of baseball, so that's been good to see. They're the best in one-run games in all of baseball, 17-7. And they're 6.5 games up on the Seattle Mariners. I won't say all is well, because they need to get some of these guys healthy again if they're going to sustain this and keep it going. And they're absolutely at some point going to need Yordan Alvarez back. Not just back, because he played the first month of the season, but they need Yordan back, Seth. They're going to need his left-handed bat, if nothing else. Just the fact that he stands on this side of home plate instead of that side of home plate to hit is going to be a benefit unto itself, regardless of actually how he hits.
Yeah, that John Singleton is back in the organization. It's cool. I'm happy that John Singleton is back in the organization, but they're scrounging for lefties.
Yeah.
They need a lefty out there.
Yep.
And it's a nice big plus and benefit if it happens to be Yordan Alvarez.
No doubt. So we're at the halfway point, 81 games. For those of you who like to do the on pace thing, and you just times two and you're good. That's what everybody's on pace for right now. It's a good point in the season, especially in between these two series with the Phillies and the Cubs, kind of sit back, take a look. What's been the biggest thing so far this year, and how big are these things going to be moving forward? I think I've got what I think are the five biggest storylines of the year, Seth, so far, and see what you think of these. Number five, bullpen magic. The bullpen has far exceeded expectations this year. I would submit that it's been maybe the biggest reason why they, you know, individually, obviously there's, you know, Hunter Brown and Jeremy Peña. As far as an entity, like a collective on the team, this has probably been the most important group on the team in terms of being the catalyst for winning games the way they've had to win these games this year.
Right. Yeah. And that's been 100% the key to why this team is as good as they are in one run games and everything else that comes to it. They almost shut out the Phillies for an entire series.
I was so mad they didn't. I was greedy
at that point.
I was so disproportionately mad as far as like how mad I should have been at that moment. You know, how mad you should have been is like, all right, well, this happens. Brian King's not been that great lately. It's only tied. They're not trailing. He didn't blow the game, and they go to win in the next inning. But like, man, I did. I wanted, and we're going to hear from Philly Radio here in a few minutes on this when we get done with the storylines. They're not happy with their team right now. I was getting greedy, man. I wanted that three-game whitewashing.
Yeah.
Big time.
Brian Abreu, and Brian Abreu makes it interesting in a fun way.
Yeah.
In that you can't hit him because he'll walk you.
Oh yeah.
But when he's dominant and really he has that movement that he does on his pitches, it's just he's impossible to hit. So when he's out there like he was yesterday, you get that you start to feel very, very confident.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, okay, well, nobody's touching him today.
He's had an incredible week. He's pitched three times this week. He's gotten 11 outs and 8 of them have been strikeouts. And he hasn't walked anybody. To your point about though, you're right. The walks had been an issue for him. He hadn't walked anybody. He's given up one hit all week long. He's been great. He was great yesterday. You know, even if he had just come in the ninth inning and did what he did, we'd have said, man, what an outing for Brian Abreu. That he came in and had to clean up a mess and go one-plus innings in that game.
Yeah.
Just great job by him. So, and I think, and to the point of this segment, like, great job by the bullpen all year long. And good job by Dana Brown finding these guys. You know, like, Dana Brown that's an area of the team where they're not spending a ton of money. They're already spending $19 million on Josh Hader. So, you know, they can't do the $11 million Montero thing anymore. They've got to find guys that are still team controlled. And that's the big thing. Like, if guys like Okert and Ort and Sousa, you know, these and Brian King, like, if this is who they are, then they've got some inexpensive labor in the bullpen that's doing a really good job, not just for this year, but for the next couple of years, too.
No, it's just this is the one of the things that's been the most pleasant happening. I was going to say surprise, but it's not a huge surprise. But is that the Astros car wash has stayed just as good. That, you know, as we exited the emphatic golden era and turned into a little bit of a reset or turnaround or whatever you want to call it, that we've never really had any opportunity to lose faith in the Astros' ability to get the absolute best out of pitchers, whether they're homegrown or whether you bring them in like a Kikuchi. They just flat out get more out of their pitchers than other teams do.
Well, and to that point, I think the number four story, five biggest Astros storylines for the season so far at the midway point is, I'll call them the starting rotation subcontractors. You know, sometimes you got your regular employees, and then you got subcontractors you bring in on one-offs to do things. That's kind of what it feels like. Colton Gordon, Brandon Walter, Ryan Gusto to a lesser degree, because he was on the team coming out of spring training. But Walter, who pitches tonight, by the way, and Colton Gordon, who was excellent against the Phillies this week. Those guys, the non-Framber, non-Hunter guys, have been a huge part of why they've had such a good June, this team.
I just love doing this. It's so much fun. The starting pitchers who have pitched the most innings so far for the Astros.
Yeah.
You got Framber and Hunter. Yeah. No big surprise there.
Yeah.
You go to Gusto. No big surprise.
No.
And then you get to these fourth most pitches, innings pitched. You go to Blanco, then Colton Gordon.
Yeah.
Then a bunch of relievers. And Hayden Wisneski.
Yeah.
Lance McCullers.
Yeah.
Brandon Walter, like those are the guys who have pitched the most innings, half of whom aren't even on the roster, aren't active right this moment. It's just incredible.
It's been chaos outside of Hunter Brown and Framber Valdez. And what I mean by that is, like, it's just been, you rattled off like nine names there, Seth. Like they have a five-man rotation, sometimes a six-man rotation. I mean, and even within that, they've called out, like, Blue Ball had to have a start at some point. They brought in Jason Alexander to pitch the last game of the A series. He gives you a quality start in all this. So that's where you know, if you're looking to give Joe Espada credit for things, his ability to – he's done a great job of managing this pitching staff, the usage of it this season, you know.
Cesar Salazar is dead last with one inning pitch right now.
But the most fun inning out of all of them, because he's a position player. I love that.
Yeah. It's awesome.
I love that.
Plus, he's got the – he's got a 0.0 ERA. I don't think they should pitch him. They shouldn't pitch him again.
No.
Let him retain that 0.0 ERA.
Or bring him – let's see how he is in clutch situation. Let's see how he is with some runners on base. Bring in Salazar with his 0.0.
You never know. His whip is zero.
I know.
Like, good luck. Good luck finding how he does with a runner on base.
That's right. Yeah. Number three storyline, the hand of Yordan Alvarez. The right hand of Yordan Alvarez, which started out as a muscle strain. Well, if we're going back, if we're to assume that Yordan has been dealing with this all year, then this is a storyline that goes back to the beginning of the season, because I choose to believe, and I would assume, that if he were dealing with it all year, that that's a big reason why his OPS was so bad.
Yeah.
Not even by Yordan standards. He has a bad OPS by Major League Baseball standards.
It's the most reasonable explanation. It doesn't mean it's the accurate one, but the fact that he was in his longest slump by far of his career, and then it turns out that he had a broken hand that at some point was broken. There was some stretch of time where it was broken and they didn't know it was broken.
Yep.
So, yeah, it makes sense that it was probably far, far before he even realized that it was something different than his normal kind of hand pain. And, that's what I would hope for. And that once he's completely healed, he'll be back to the guy that he's been for his entire career up until this season.
Yeah, the stretch they're on in June has become a real luxury in terms of handling Yordan Alvarez. You know, the fact that the pitching's been so good, the hitting's gotten better. It's not great, but it's gotten better. Mm-hmm. You don't have to rush Yordan back. And this team has rushed guys back at times. Ask JP France about getting rushed back. You know, like this team has not been the best at handling return to action for guys. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they're winning baseball games, the fact that once they get through this Cubs series and they get through the Dodgers next week, then you're almost to the All-Star break and a stretch of baseball where you're not playing very good teams. The Astros have put themselves in a really good position to handle Yordan with the extreme kid gloves. If this were last year, Seth, where at this point they're still trailing the Mariners by a bunch of games, there would have been the temptation, and Yordan had the same injury, there might have been a temptation to not rush him back, but bring him back the exact day, the very first day that he could have. They have the luxury now, if they want to, of going, yeah, you know what? Give it another week just to make sure, you know.
Yeah, and I would say the same for Spencer Arrigetti. When you're dealing with a broken bone, a bone. And The broken bone, it always sounds simple enough. Like, oh, the bone heals and there you go. When it comes to the hand and the foot, there's so many little intricate the processes going on that being conservative as possible makes the most sense.
Yeah.
Because you got to, especially if you're a pitcher with your hand, or thumb or whatever, you got to get all those muscles, all that fine tuning back so they can take their time with them.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, number two, five biggest storylines so far, the Astros 2025 season. They're winning the Kyle Tucker trade right now. Mm-hmm. Kyle Tucker is going to be an all-star in the National League. He is a very reasonable MVP candidate. I mean, Shohei's going to win it because he's going to win it every year. But Kyle Tucker is in the conversation for MVP of the National League, and I would submit the Astros are winning this trade. You got a third baseman to replace Alex Bregman, who is playing overall just as good a baseball as you got from Bregman when he was an Astro. Paredes has 16 home runs right now. He's playing an outstanding third base. And Cam Smith has the makings of a future star. He hasn't shown the power, maybe, that he was flashing in spring training. He's only got 5 home runs, and that's kind of buoyed by a cut. He has a couple of 2 home run games, so he kind of bunched a couple of days. He's had 3 days in which he's hit a home run. He's got 5 home runs total. But I was thinking about this last night, Cam Smith, or yesterday. And they're showing Cam Smith just standing in the outfield, and I'm thinking, they're talking about his numbers, and I'm like, he's going to hit for, like, look at him. He's going to hit for power eventually. Like, just look at him. Like, he will be a 25 home run guy at some point.
You go back to Kyle Tucker, and early in his career, he was really good at hitting stuff to the warning track, you know, and eventually he learned how to lift it up out of there.
Yep.
And Cam Smith, there's nothing to be pessimistic about right now at all.
No.
I mean, yeah, like, you'd have to be honestly a lunatic to be pessimistic about him.
Yeah.
If you break it down by Fangraphs WAR, Kyle Tucker has a 3.6 WAR on the season so far. Paredes and Cam Smith combined have a 3.8 WAR.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and now, but you have the added also the years of control you have over those both those players compared to Kyle Tucker just being a rental up in
the biggest asset in this trade is the years of control you have over Cam Smith this year and the subsequent years. That's the biggest. We said that at the time. We said that when you and I were there when he was hitting bombs his first week at spring training, that's the pivot point on this trade, because the Astros were never going to give Kyle Tucker a 10-year contract. If Cam Smith turns into something, the Astros win this trade in a landslide, in my opinion.
If we had Wisniewski's WAR into it, then they're 0.2 behind Kyle Tucker.
Oh, he was negative. He was negative 0.4. He's negative 0.4. Okay. Yeah.
Well, in my mind, I was like, I won't use Wisniewski because I don't know. I don't remember what his WAR was, but it might help out the Astros. But still, okay. It's a one for, except that you've got a guy in his rookie contract versus a guy who's a 1-year rental.
Yeah. Well, and it goes to show you, A, how good those, I'll call them again, subcontractors they've been using in the starting rotation have been, and B, just how good Paredes and Cam Smith have been, that you had a guy in that trade that literally a month into his career needed Tommy John surgery, and you're still winning that trade, I think. I won't say convincingly. I mean, Kyle Tucker's a really good base. I don't want to diminish. Like, Kyle Tucker is arguably one of the 15 best players in baseball. A lot of it has to do with just what we know the outcome was going to be if he had still been here this year. He wasn't staying. He was leaving. So that maybe that turns into a separate argument, criticizing ownership or the front office for not keeping Kyle Tucker. But if you know what the situation is and you're a fan, you go, okay, well, if we know that there needs to be a bailout, there needs to be a consolation prize, this goes far beyond a consolation prize for Kyle Tucker. These are two very good baseball players under team control, you know? Yeah. So that's number two. Number one storyline for the Astros, and this is going to be a storyline now for the next couple of years because of Jeremy Peña hiring Scott Boras earlier this week to represent him. But the ascension of Jeremy Peña has been essential to this team. He's not only their most valuable player, he's in the conversation for the most valuable player in the American League right now. Judge will probably win it, but Jeremy Peña right now, if the season ended today and you had people vote on the MVP, Jeremy Peña is a top 5 MVP candidate in baseball, in the American League.
100%. Yeah. And he will not be a starter with the All-Stars, but that's a popularity contest. Yeah. Blum the other night sounded kind of shocked that it was a popularity contest. And that's... people are voting on the internet, and they're allowed to vote multiple times. And it 100% becomes a popularity contest.
Well, your employer is your employer. And I'm not. And by the way, this is not shade at the Astros for doing this. Every team in baseball does this, but every team tells their fans to go just vote party line for the Astros. Like, they're literally telling fans to go vote for Christian Walker for the All-Star team, you know?
Yeah, the baseball and the NBA All-Star squads have just always been about largely just popularity.
Yeah.
And it's not always an accurate reflection of just who the actual best guys are.
It will be interesting to see. Pena deserves to make the team.
Yeah.
But the problem is that either Jacob Wilson or Bobby Witt Jr. is going to get voted in. And the other one of those two absolutely deserves to be in the game. Do they take three shortstops to the All-Star game?
Yeah, it's not like the most egregious of all injustices or anything. There's just some really good shortstops this year.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he deserves to go. And sometimes the fan voting, the starting is a popularity contest. Sometimes the reserves, you need to have some reputation, some goodwill in the bank for a couple of years. But I think Pena's going to make it, but I don't think it's the – and he should. I just, the process doesn't make it the slam dunk that it should be.
So even if no Astros make it past phase two, they still get an All-Star anyway, because in Major League Baseball, every team gets an All-Star.
Yeah, but Hunter Brown's going to be that guy for the Astros. Like Hunter Brown's going to start the All-Star game. The Astros are going to get three or four guys. Hader's going to make it. I think Pena's going to make it. Paredes deserves to. Framber deserves to. So those are my five, Seth. Bullpen. The starting rotation outside of Hunter and Framber. These are the top storylines.
These are the stories that
have gotten us
came into the season. Yeah,
yeah, they've gotten us here. Jordan's hand, winning the Kyle Tucker trade, and the ascension of Jeremy Pena. Those have been the biggest storylines so far in the Astros season.
I don't think you missed any. I don't know, amongst the top five, I don't think there's any one of the storylines that should be better than that. Good job, Sean.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate that. It was hard to leave Hunter Brown and Framber Valdez out of it, but I think this is kind of what we expected out of both of them coming into the year.
Yeah, it hasn't been as much a storyline that those guys are really good.
Yeah.
As much as these other storylines have been surprising.
A little surprising.
Jordan especially. Biggest of those five things is Jordan's A, slump, and then B, his mysterious broken hand, the most surprising of all of them?
Not for me, because he's had a hand issue before. The biggest surprise for me is probably how good the bullpen has been. I did a piece on the Houston Press early before the season where I talked about this maybe being a breakout season for Jeremy Pena. So that doesn't shock me. And we saw some of it in spring training, the adjustments he had made. Probably the bullpen is the biggest surprise for me, just because I didn't know any of these guys coming into the season.
The bullpen,
the pitching at large, the bullpen and the guys that they brought up from Sugar.
Yeah, I mean, you knew them, but you didn't quite expect the guys in the bullpen.
Not this.
Exactly. You didn't know this version of them. I guess for me it would be the starting pitching.
Yeah.
The fact that you've had to rely on those guys. It's not like they've come in and given you some pleasant surprises or doses of positive play here or there. It's like you've had to rely on them heavily, and they've been winning ever since all those injuries started happening.
Yep. No, that's a good one. All right. So I was listening in on Philly radio this morning. Obviously, we know the Astros just completely flummoxed the Phillies for three games. This goes back to last year too, and they shut them out in their series of the last game last year as well. So I wanted to listen in. So I listened in on WIP, our sister station up there, on the Odyssey app. Download the Odyssey app. And it was John DeCamera, and it was Jody Mack in for John Ritchie. John Ritchie, former fullback for the Eagles, is normally the co-host on there. He's on vacation. So it was Jody Mack. I got a little jealous right out of the chute, Seth. I turned them on right at 5 o'clock, and they said, live from the Tasty Cake Studios, which today are at the Borgata in Atlantic City. Here's Joe DeCamera, and I say John DeCamera, I think it's Joe DeCamera, and Jody Mack. And I'm like, man, 10 seconds in, I'm completely jealous. Their studio is named after a delicious pastry company, and they're doing their show live from a casino at 6 in the morning. That's pretty good. So I'm glad that they were completely frustrated by the Astros. Here's DeCamera and Jody Mack talking about, listen to them and tell me that they don't sound like how Seth and I sounded like the first 3 weeks of the Astros season this year.
And when you measure this offense against either other offenses in baseball we're through the years in baseball history, including, by the way, like 80 Phillies, 08 Phils, 07 Phils, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, guys, we're smart enough to know this offense, Jody, for a true World Series contending team, this offense at a very basic level just does not have. Now, I want to be careful here to say enough because theoretically they can still win the World Series, but I'll frame it this way. The offense itself does not have enough players that you feel you can count on, period. Who can you count on, Jody?
There's an imbalance to this roster.
Is it
you
zero?
You're 100% right.
Who can you count on?
Count on?
Yeah, is it zero?
It all depends on how you define
count. No, what is it? It's zero, right? Right now, there's zero players. Seltzer, what's the number? Zero?
I mean, like, Schwarber. Yeah, I think Schwarber. And look, this season, Turner, you have been able to count on him for the most part. But I get it. Like, come the playoffs, I don't think anyone's going to definitely count on him. But I do think this season, Schwarber and Turner, you could say you can count on those two guys.
Okay. So, yeah, that, dude, I was listening, and I kept listening to them after that, too. And I'm like, this is what we sounded like. This is the difference between winning and losing. If they had won each of these games 1-0, 2-0, and 2-1 and swept the series, that's not the thing. And by the way, the hitting with both of these teams was very even in this series. Neither team hit the ball that well. The Astros just came up in big situations, and their pitchers clutched up in big situations in this series. Like, that's the difference between the joy you and I are experiencing this morning and what we just heard. It is a very thin line. It is a very thin line.
This as we've just already discussed in this, the pitching has turned the Astros offense into a less infuriating affair because your pitching is so good that all you do need is just somebody do something in the 6th, 7th, 8th, or 9th inning in these close games, and that's exactly how it happened yesterday. You had Cam Smith show up in a big moment with two outs and drove Paredes home. The hand-wringing that we had over the offense, I mean, we could say almost all the exact same things that we were saying at any point earlier in the season,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
They've shown little hints of promise here and there, but you just swept the team in a three-game series by scoring three runs. One of the best teams in baseball.
Yeah.
You had to sweep them by scoring three runs over the course of three games.
Yeah. But it's fun. It's fun right now. We'll see what happens with the Cubs this weekend. Cubs a little more firepower than this Phillies team. All right, shifting gears. You know, it's too bad that we don't do a Pettycast on Friday. We typically do it on Tuesday. Because, boy, Kendrick Perkins wants a piece of Bill Simmons. This was Bill Simmons on his podcast talking about ESPN's NBA draft coverage.
I didn't know which telecast to watch. It was like, do I take this samurai sword and jam it into my temple, or do I take this chainsaw and saw my leg off? I couldn't figure it out.
Okay, that's harsh. And he had mentioned Perkins by name also, like, before in that podcast. And for those who don't know, if you weren't following the NBA draft on TV this week, they had an ABC feed and an ESPN feed with two different teams. Stephen A. Smith was on the big feed on ABC with a couple of guys, and the one on ESPN included Kendrick Perkins along with Jay Billis. And Simmons was not a fan of either broadcast, which is a little ironic because Simmons used to be on the draft coverage and he was not the greatest on that draft.
No, even people that like Bill Simmons as a podcaster would concede that, oh yeah, he sucked on television.
Yeah. So I found that a little ironic. I don't know if it's take-a-mania worthy. We'll find out at 9 o'clock today. Kendrick Perkins got wind of this. This is Kendrick Perkins sitting in a suit in the front seat of his car, getting ready to go to some event, ready to wring Bill Simmons' neck.
Thinking about Bill Simmons, Cupcake Gas. Always got my name in his mouth, but I'm going to address you Sunday, okay? Believe that. I'm going to address you on my special edition, me only, yours truly, Sunday on Road Tripping, okay? They give me my spot, and I'm going to get on your ass like back pockets. I'm not tired of you. I don't know who anointed you the preacher or king of the head honcho of overseeing basketball and way things need to be. Man, what have you done? What have you done? What have you done, period, in the game of basketball? Have you ever played? And I usually don't even address people because I don't even be really caring about it, but it's kind of pissing me off because you feel like you're sitting on this throne. You got in your feelings. You got in your feelings because I said that I felt like the Toronto Raptors are going to be a top six seed. Why was that like, oh, Perk, he said this and I'm a, man, shut up. You didn't think before you started drinking them Heinekens. And then you got your little peanut gallery up on the podcast who just agree, yeah, Bill, yeah, you're right. Stand up. Man, shut the hell up. The hell you done done. But I'm going to get more on your ass come Sunday. Believe that. I'm going to finish doing my research on you. Oh. Enough is enough. Like you some type of head honcho. Okay. You ain't no shot caller.
That was a great tease for whatever it is Perkins is doing Sunday. I don't know if it's a podcast or if it's a TV show. I don't know what it is. I will go find it. I promise you that. He's doing research on Bill Simmons. That means it's going to get personal. Ooh.
What team did he say was going to be the sixth seed?
Toronto, the Raptors.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he had a whole I actually trimmed that down. Like, he had a whole about 45 seconds to a minute where he defended his take on the Raptors. I just figured Houston doesn't give a crap about that. They just want to hear Kendrick Perkins talk about beating the hell out of Bill Simmons verbally.
Yeah, verbally. He's not physically threatening him or anything.
No.
I feel like he didn't, you know, Kendrick didn't have to go to the, you didn't play card.
Because
that's just it. You can say that about anybody as a commentator that didn't play.
I'm sad he did that.
Yeah. Because it's he didn't have to do that, especially if he's going to be doing his research and what have
That's right.
So other than that, as long as he leaves that part out of it, then I'm gung-ho. And I say that as a former athlete who's in the media. Yeah. It's cheap. It's just easy. It's
lazy. It's lazy. You know,
It's lazy. So I hope he doesn't lean into that part of
it.
I'm going to get on your ass like back pockets.
Okay, I'm glad you played
that again. That was good.
The two things I wrote down that I really liked in there, cupcake ass at the very beginning, Bill Simmons. That's where you knew it was going to get personal. Like, it wasn't going to be one of these things like where he was explaining himself to Bill and trying to make it like, hey, here's what I meant, blah, blah, blah. But he goes, I got to talk about Bill Simmons. Cupcake ass. And I'm like, ooh, okay, this is going to get good. It's going to get good. And on your ass like back pockets. I've never heard that before. That's excellent. That's really, really good. Did you play? Yes. Cheap heat is what that was. Mm-hmm. Cheap heat. I'm going to go find whatever this is Perk is doing on Sunday about Bill Simmons. I will seek that out for sure.
It's his solo show. Is it on television or is that his podcast?
I don't know.
Something?
He said something. I don't know.
He said they let me do it solo, so I think it's on. It must be on television.
Yeah, Road Trip. He said something about Road Trip, so maybe it's a show that's called Road Trip. I'm not sure.
Good promoting there too, though. Kendrick Perkins.
Really good. Yeah.
Yeah. That was really good.
Oh, you know what it is?
Road Trippin'. Yes.
And he's gonna be doing an episode of. Do you know what it is? Is it a podcast?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, it's a podcast with Richard Jefferson, Channing Frye, and Allie Clifton.
Okay.
So
maybe Perk gets his. Maybe they're on vacation or something.
I'm just very curious about what kind of research he's going to be doing.
I do too. Yeah. What is AI?
Well, there's a whole lot of easy. Anybody that's written as much and said as much as Bill Simmons, he'll be able to trip him up a bunch of times.
Yeah.
Especially if Kendrick. You know, Bill Simmons has attacked nobody as much as he's attacked ESPN itself.
Yes.
They could probably get a legion of interns to just go find all the different ways that Simmons has either contradicted himself or anything. The same way any of us who speak a lot end up contradicting ourselves a lot. So, yeah, he'll have some good ammo.
God, I hope I don't piss off Perk. Perk is a guy who does research on people that criticize him. He just got taken off of every Pettycast and every Take-A-Mania. I don't need that kind of heat. How has Bill Simmons messed up? I'm just going to see if Google's AI says anything. If he's just Bill Simmons' career has had its share of missteps, particularly his departure from ESPN and subsequent criticism of their handling of inside the NBA. Okay, we've done that. All right, so he's goes on to talk about. I was hoping there'd be something juicier right out of the chute. Departure from NBA, criticism, over reliance on catchphrases and gimmicks.
Bill Simmons,
that's true. Yeah. He was one of the first ones that did like a lot of long form, like, this is how the NBA season compares to the movie Rounders, you know? And it was, I liked him as a writer on ESPN page two. I really enjoyed him a lot. Not so much with the spoken word. Solipsistic tendency. Okay, I'm off of the AI. Sorry about that.
What were you trying to say there?
Solipsistic is the word. It's yeah.
He's trying to say axis.
That's why you need the Odyssey Rewind feature, people. Well, let's go from Bill Simmons to somebody far less annoying, Colin Cowherd. is Cowherd sold on the Houston Rockets?
My 2026 NBA championship bubble, I would have Houston, OKC, Cleveland, Minnesota, Orlando, and then I would have the Celtics and the Nuggets close. New York's two best offensive players are both terrible defensively. There's no Lakers if Austin Reeves is your third best player. Look around the NBA. Old doesn't work anymore. Indy's young. Orlando's young. Houston's young. OKC's young. Boston has young players. I mean, one of Denver's problems? They're too old.
He highlights one of the coolest things. At the end of the day, it doesn't bother me whether Cowherd thinks the Rockets are a title contender or not. He highlighted something there, Seth, that I think is worth repeating. We've talked about it already. The Rockets just made a trade for Kevin Durant, one of the 10 best players in the NBA this century, for sure. Still a great scorer. And yet they get thrown into the bucket as this team is young. And they are. Mm-hmm. Like, my guess is, even with Kevin Durant at age 36, soon to be 37 on the team, that they're still one of the youngest teams in the NBA on average.
They were the 11th for this last season. They were the 11th youngest team in the NBA.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, like, Steven Adams and Fred VanVleet and everything, like, they rounded out. Like, do you have – so I think sometimes when you talk about whether a team is young or not, like, okay, wait, do you have multiple – in like impactful young players, and like that, as far as the average age, sometimes that doesn't tell
the age of the rotation is the big thing for me, because yeah. Here's why I say that. Jeff Green crushes your average for you. Jeff Green got drafted the same season, the same draft that Kevin Durant did, except Durant was a freshman coming out and Jeff Green I think was a four-year guy at Georgetown. Yeah. Jeff Green's got to be 40 now, you know, like that's so mm-hmm. I mean, one guy doesn't throw it off kilter. I just think
They do it average age by minutes, too, in the Rockets.
Oh, they weight it.
10th yeah. in average age by minutes.
There you go.
11th overall, but 10th in
yeah,
minutes.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing for me. Like, it doesn't bother me. I like the Cowherd's got him in his, what do you call it, a championship bubble? It's a bubble, he called it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like, well, we talked about this yesterday. He said that, you know, age doesn't work in the NBA anymore. It's never, like, people try to read into trends way too much
yeah.
about what works or doesn't work. And then all of a sudden, at some point 5 years ago, that thing that wasn't working, lo and behold, a good team is making that work.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I like it just in the overall comp. I think on any team, you want to have your good, you want to have your really good young promising players, but you'd like to have a couple of old heads as well.
Yeah.
And I think the Rockets have the right blend on that team. But they do feel, they feel like a very young and still on the rise team because of guys like Amen Thompson and Şengün and everybody else.
Right, right. Like you take the last two places Durant went where it didn't work out, Brooklyn and then Phoenix. Their moves to put the cores together that they have were this series of all-in moves. You know, Durant was an all-in move for Phoenix. He is leaving that place. I'm not saying it's his fault, but he is leaving that place, and the place is in complete disarray and yeah. complete destruction. Similarly, look where Brooklyn's picking every year since that big three fell apart. Kevin Durant could come here and be average for the next 3 years or get hurt, and this team is still well-positioned to be a very, very good basketball team, even 3 years mm-hmm. from now. All those guys are still in their mid-20s. So that's exciting. Like, it's not... It's a move that has an all-in name in Kevin Durant that's not an all-in move for the Rockets. Not even close. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you here on a Friday. We'll do the we'll do Take a Mania at 9 o'clock today. We've got some really good entries. Trying to take down John McClain, who is the current champion. He holds the belt for the current worst take on the sports landscape. So we'll get to that. Similarities between the Texans and the Rockets. I think this draft in the NBA highlights one big similarity with yet another one. These two teams have been very similar the last few years. Another big similarity between these two coming out of the NBA draft this week. We've got that for you coming up next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Was it a preview of the World Series that we watched in MLB? Former major league pitcher says maybe so. We'll get to that at 8 o'clock. We'll do that at the top of the hour. The Texans and the Rockets have been on very similar trajectories, made very similar moves through the last couple of years. We've highlighted that several times on this show, from coaching to the way the roster's been rebuilt to the time frame, going all the way back to Deshaun Watson and James Harden demanding a trade the same week, which seemed to be the starting point for the rebuild for both teams. They've had very similar paths here. The hope is for, obviously, future postseason success for both teams. Another big similarity, I think, came out of this draft this week in the NBA. This was Stephen A. Smith on ESPN making a pretty bold prediction, actually, or a pretty bold statement here about what Cooper Flagg means to the Dallas Mavericks.
I think he could potentially make them the number one threat to the Oklahoma City Thunder. When you consider the way that Dallas has fared against Oklahoma City in recent memory, with or without Luka Doncic, with a Kyrie Irving on the floor, considering that you've got an Anthony Davis, assuming he's healthy, with a Lively, with a Gafford, with a Klay Thompson, etc., PJ Washington, let's not forget about him. This is a very formidable team. If healthy, that's the big question. Health. There are no questions about Cooper Flagg. When you see this brother leading Duke, points, rebounds, assists, steals, block shots, he's all world, okay? Only four people in NCAA history have been National Player of the Year as a freshman. He was one of them. He's the real deal. Houston and other teams you got to pay attention to. But in my mind, clearly Dallas is the number one threat to OKC if everybody's healthy.
Okay, I mean, I disagree with a lot of what he said there. I agree with some of it. I disagree with a lot of it. I think relative to the Texans and the Rockets, what it got me thinking about, Seth, was that the next similarity between these two teams is I think that they're both viewed as clearly the best teams in their divisions right now. I think it's safe to say, I mean, the Rockets were the 2 seed in their entire conference, and the Texans are a 10-7 team in a division full of teams that are below 500, some way below 500. So I think that's obviously a similarity, but they are now both dealing with multiple number one overall picks in their division. Like Victor Wembanyama is giving San Antonio a lot of hope. Cooper Flagg clearly is giving Dallas a lot of hope, and Stephen A. Smith some serious delusion over what exactly they can be next season, in my opinion. Similarly, and I don't know that this is as threatening a duo as Wemby and Cooper Flagg are to the Rockets, but the Texans are dealing with a former, at least labeled, generational talent in Trevor Lawrence. He hasn't been that yet. He's sort of the Wemby in this thing. And then Cam Ward, who is, you know, I don't think he's the level of Cooper Flagg is, but Cam Ward, number one overall pick this year, like Cooper Flagg just was. You're dealing with teams in your division, both the Rockets and the Texans, who haven't, they're not there yet. But they've got the foundational players that they feel can get them there, and it's up to us to kind of figure out, okay, how big a threat are these? Who's under more of a threat to their supremacy in their respective divisions right now, the Rockets or the Texans, do you think?
And within the division?
Yeah.
Oh, I still think I would say the Rockets, just because one or two players can make that much of a difference.
Yeah.
And that those players in Wembanyama and Cooper Flagg, if they really deliver on their potential, yeah, it's a really, really high ceiling.
Yeah.
Football, it's like teams make quick turnarounds, but none of those teams in the division in the AFC South really have great overall rosters, regardless of how well Cam Ward plays, or maybe you see Daniel Jones do the Sam Darnold thing and you get the absolute best out of him this year. They still have weaker overall rosters, and generally it takes longer to change those.
Yeah.
And but at the same time, I still think the Rockets have more of a very clear window to be a championship caliber team.
Yes.
You know, so it's the AFC South is a weak division.
Yeah.
And in football, divisions don't really change as quickly as things can change in basketball.
Yeah. What's your concern level over what Cam Ward could be or is in the near future?
It's twofold. Yeah. There's on the rookie side of things, he makes me nervous because he's a guy that, you know, kind of a lot like Pat Mahomes, not in player comp, but in the willingness to take risks in college. People look at it, and they look at it as a negative, because if he continues to play that way, then it's going to be an issue. Pat Mahomes, as we know, figured out a way to play a little bit more controlled and could still do that stuff out of pocket and improvisationally. So Cam Ward has that potential, I think, is he's got to rein some things in and learn when not to play hero ball. But if he does do that, yes, he has the arm talent. He has the athleticism to keep defenses off balance. He can create. So, in the short term, I worry about the fact that on any given Sunday, that when you've got a rookie like that, you might see the bad version of the rookie where he throws four picks, but you also might see the best version of the rookie where he has four miracle throws and they beat you by 28 points because of that.
And you just hope you're not playing him on that Sunday. It's a little like what you talk about with Anthony Richardson. Totally different players, but he's going to have like three amazing games throughout the season. You just hope you're not playing him on one of those Sundays where he has that amazing game.
Yeah, all those. You know who else was like that? Was Ryan Fitzpatrick in the first half of his career.
Yes.
Fitzpatrick would have incredible games. Yeah. Like his first time he ever started against the Texans.
Is a Ram.
We were up by multiple scores against the Vikings or was it the Vikings?
It was the Rams.
The Rams. Yeah, and Fitzpatrick comes in. I'm sure they talked about 29 times about how he went to Harvard. That was when it all started,
that day.
That was when the world first would learn that, he did go to Harvard.
Oh, my God. I go back and forth in the division with quarterbacks over what I'm more nervous with. Trevor Lawrence, kind of recapturing some of that brief magic he had back in 2022. If Liam Cohen gets that version of him, or Cam Ward just being something new that's in the division. And it turns out, he's a rookie that, C.J. Stroud just gets it. The game is not fast for him. It slows down very quickly for him. I go back and forth, and the thing with Trevor Lawrence with Liam Cohen, and I'm nervous about that, but, they were saying all these same things about Doug Peterson, who did get a version of Trevor Lawrence for a half a season that everybody thought he would get, but then for the next two full seasons, Trevor Lawrence was trash. He wasn't good for nearly two fulls. He was good the first half of 23. Okay, the first half of 23. Point being, all the same things that I find myself saying about Liam Cohen. I'm like, all right, weren't we just saying this about Doug Peterson with Trevor? And Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl.
I think that the thing with a guy like Trevor Lawrence, who still is a guy that hasn't really progressed beyond, people view him as, defenses view him as a first read quarterback. Mm-hmm. That if the first read's not there, he doesn't exactly know what to do with it. Or if you can fool him with your defensive alignments and coverages and everything. So the danger is in the first year that a coordinator has with a guy like that, it's kind of like when you face a rookie quarterback, you don't know what the tendencies are going to be.
Right.
You don't know exactly how Liam Cohen's going to use him and how is he going to potentially mask some of Trevor Lawrence's weaknesses.
Yeah.
Doug Peterson did a good job of getting the best out of maybe what Trevor Lawrence's ceiling was at that point, and they couldn't progress beyond it. Liam Cohen might do that very same thing, especially in the first half of the season.
Yeah.
And you don't have enough film on him yet to know exactly what the plan is. And Lawrence has the physical ability to take advantage of stuff.
It's
like
funny,
that.
You know, the dynamic you and I are talking about, these two particular quarterbacks, the Texans play them in the first month of the season. The Texans' first five games are super interesting. They play the Rams in the opener, which is, I think, two of the top at least 12 teams, if not 10 or 8 teams in the NFL going against each other. Monday night against Tampa Bay the next week, you're playing against the team that won the division and is viewed as a good team. And then those next 2 weeks are when you play Trevor Lawrence on the road and you play Cam Ward at home, and then you're going up to Baltimore to face a team that you have not put up a good performance against yet in the D'Amico Ryans era. That's a really, really interesting first month of the season for
them. And within the division, if you look at Jacksonville, it's the first time these two teams will have faced since Trevor Lawrence decided to wait until the last moment to duck underneath the freight train.
Yeah.
And, people look at Trevor Lawrence as the victim in that Alshire hit. And if anything, I look at him as a cautionary tale. He's no better than the dumb kid that tries to ride a freight train through the city and then gets decapitated by a bridge. he shouldn't have been standing up on that freight train.
That's right.
Dummy? What the hell are you doing?
Dummy?
Yeah.
How to get decapitated. That's how.
Setting a bad example.
Right. Trains and Aziza.
Look at all my live stream TikTok follower. Boom.
Blammo.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. Was this a preview of the World Series this coming October that we just watched the last 3 days? One former pitcher says yes. We will let you hear that. Let you hear who it is coming up next.